everyone, and welcome to episode 117 of season 11 Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is someone who just had a birthday yesterday. So happy birthday to Niall McGowan of the Bat Minute, and welcome back for yet another season where hopefully we'll have fun things to talk about. Oh, wait, not necessarily.
Hi, Rob. Thank you for the birthday wish. This is, not the most lighthearted of episodes coming up here, but like, well, hopefully we'll make them appropriately lighthearted.
And I sure will. I don't have a problem with that. I have enough faith in both you and me that we're going to be able to do these three episodes and give them justice that they deserve. There's no problem about that.
As I was saying to you in the green room, it was my bad because I was just like, oh yeah, of course I'll talk about Band of Brothers. It's a classic. And it's only like 2 days before the recording. I was like, what part are we talking about? Oh God. Oh my God. It's like, this is like it's a pretty dark show, but I think this is like the darkest hour we're about to end, like enter here, where it's just like, man, I could have gone for some of that episode 10, that light and sunshine, when like, you know, they're just hanging out in the castle and stuff. But,
Well, that's also a little dark too. You know, you can look from that perspective too.
I mean, the whole thing is just like, there's no like, unless it's, you know, like the producers, there's no yucks to be had in Band of Brothers, really.
So. Exactly. So you know that's fine. You know, I'm not concerned about that. Okay. So what is your background with Band of Brothers?
It was just mostly like I was of age, like, you know, the kind of, I don't want to say like the perfect age for this when it came out, but I was 14. And it was, you know, it was at I believe it was kind of like that age of the beginning of that era they kind of called like the golden age of TV now, where it was like The Sopranos and Deadwood and all this stuff was kind of like, all the HBO stuff was getting going, basically. And like, you know, I was in school, I was into history, and this coming out was like, I know like Band of Brothers is probably more like, it's marketed to like older people because, you know, it's dealing with such mature material. But I feel like a teenager who was interested in history and like prestige TV at the time, when things were like getting like TV, it's good now. It was the prime time to get this. So I remember it being like appointment viewing, and everyone in school was always talking about it and stuff. And I'm surprised that it's like really, like, I'm not surprised. I'm just very happy to see that it's really stood the test of time. I was talking to someone just yesterday about like coming on to record this. And he was saying, like, I've never seen Band of Brothers. Is it worth watching? And I was like, you would think they made this today. Like, it's so, like, timeless. Like, there's not a single element is dated. It literally looks like it's a brand new show.
Right, yeah. The only thing that's dated is if you look at most of the bit parts, you're like, what the hell is Michael Fassbender doing in, like, a small little part of Christensen? You know, why is he not right in the spotlight? You know, that's the only thing that will really get
That was like the joy of it. I found rewatching it in the last week was like, it does become spot the future superstar bingo, where you're like, that's Simon Pegg just standing in the background for some reason. Hey, there's James McAvoy. Oops, now he's gone. Exactly. It's like every other actor is just like, they're clearly like, it's kind of like they got the best. Literally, they got like literally the best of all the people. So they're like, yeah, all these guys are gonna go on to be something. Like, you know, it's kind of more surprising that most of Easy Company are the guys who like fell away in terms of their careers. It's like all the bit parts are like, you know, you think you're almost done, and all of a sudden they throw a last minute Tom Hardy at you, and you're like, Jesus Christ, what the hell is he doing here?
A naked Tom Hardy.
Naked Tom Hardy, looking like a guy who's in the wrong body. Like, it's just like, that's not what Tom Hardy should look like. And then you're like, oh, fine. And then a couple of years later, it's like, oh, he becomes like the bulking kind of guy we know. And like, hey, there you go. He's found his actual physical form finally, you know. But again, I was just so happy to see, though, that it's like, it's still so revered in that, like, you know, I know people who own the DVD box set and it's like a prized possession and stuff. And they'll still talk about like, yeah, once every 2 years or so, I'll crack out the, not the streaming, they'll be like, oh, crack out the DVDs. You know, it's you've got to have had this for like, you know, what'll be 20, 5 years now, I guess it'll be since this came out.
Right. You also have the metal one, like I think it's a green metal box that when you open it up, it has like the, all the discs are connected in an accordion, type of thing.
But
That's all good.
yeah, it's just one of those ones. Like I was just, you're very happy to say like, oh, this show was really. Again, it also feels like it's this the most bizarre TV spinoff ever, where it's like, is this the Frasier to Saving Private Ryan's Cheers? It's just like, oh, Band of Brothers. It just feels like you're watching Saving Private Ryan, the TV show, but it's all the same people. So it's like, yeah, it kind of ostensibly what it is. But so it's not one I tend to go back and rewatch myself personally all that much, but I know. That is, I know that it is revered within, within culture, and then now going back to revisit it after so long, I was like, yeah, that was like it deserves to be like it's hard to find any proper fault with it, again, except now the fact that it's just like it is slightly distracting to be like, oh hey, that guy's gonna be huge, and they're literally like some of the people in the background, you're going like, is that. Is that Jimmy Fallon? Like, what the hell is he doing here? Like, it's one of these really crazy kind of things, I didn't even think that whole thing. I know you all talked about that already, but the fact that Jimmy Fallon was just once an actor is just like crazy. Every time I go back to watch Almost Famous, you're like, oh, yeah, that's right, Jimmy Fallon's in this. But it feels like he was just born. He was just gestated behind that desk, and like he's never left that studio, But like, no, it turns out he had a whole career before that.
No, he's definitely has some good acting bits, over the years. Like I love him in Fever Pitch, the American version of it. I thought he was great in that. But you're right.
He had to, it's
Everyone
one of
Loves
the
Raymond
best lines
now.
in Almost Famous, in that it only gets funnier as the years go by, where he's just like, if you think Mick Jagger's gonna be up there acting like a rock star over the age of 50, you got another thing coming. And like that joke was funny back in 2001, and now it's 25 years later, and it's like it still works because the a**hole's still going. But
Apparently, there you go. So now it's nice to have things like that. But I mean, one of the things that one of my guests a few months ago was he had a small bit part here, and he basically said that when at the time when he went for the interview, and like he kept seeing it in all of the apparently they had some sort of booklet of all the up and coming actors, and he said just about everybody who was on that list back in 2000, 2001, was found a part in this in this miniseries, because it was this huge production that was coming to England, and they wanted all of these British actors, and hey, so like you said, James McAvoy, here, we're gonna give you a little part. And all as you and I have, and everyone else is watching this, we're looking back and we're saying, well, how the hell did these people get this role, at the time? And was this part of their springboard to be more famous later on, or not? That's the whole thing. I mean, I don't think someone looked at the 2 or 3 minutes of screen time that James McAvoy had here and said, wow, he was amazing in this movie. I think he's going to be a great young Professor X. I mean, I don't think that's where it happened, but having that on your resume is definitely, would have moved him on to the next project, and the next project, things like that. So it wasn't like an immediate springboard. Same thing you said about Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy looks very different here than he does in later things that he does. And it still took him a few years after this movie or after this miniseries to really start hitting hitting his stride. But again, it could have moved him from place to place. I said, hey, that Nikita Jovanovich is great. I want to give him a little part of my movie, and I want to give him a little part of my movie. And wait a second, hey, he's going to be great to have in in this movie and that movie and all the different things. I think Bronson was probably his first big movie, right? Am I right about that?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was definitely what landed him.
Right.
It's weird too, because like over here there's been like obviously I grew up in Ireland, and then we got all the English TV was just like it was just there. So around this time too, James McAvoy's doing Early Doors, which is like one of the great short-lived, well, I'll say great short-lived sitcoms. In England, all the sitcoms are like two seasons
Forget
long.
about the fact that the
So
two seasons, they each have like six episodes.
yeah.
Each season is six
So like
episodes.
the I think there's like 12 episodes of Early Doors. They're all absolutely perfect, but it's just like, yeah, that's all you're getting ever, you know? But so even before he was like Mr. Tumnus, he was like, oh, he was the boyfriend in only season one of Early Doors, because at that point his star was beginning to shine. So it was like an instantaneous of like, oh, there's the boyfriend. Oh, now he's like a big guy, like he's
We can't afford that
skyrocketed.
anymore.
Did you talk about too, like the most random thing I came across too, just by sheer coincidence, while rewatching the show, was because Mark Warren, obviously he's in there,
Mark
but that
Warren
he
plays
was,
Blythe, right?
yeah, but he was like, I don't think it's in his IMDb anywhere. He was Ewan McGregor's body double for the special all the special effects stuff during episode one. So
Really?
he's not in any Star
Oh,
Wars
wow.
anywhere, but you can get behind the scenes footage of them shooting like Qui-Gon, Jar Jar, and Obi-Wan, like, you know, flying or, you know, sailing or whatever you want to call it, to the Gungan underwater city. And it's full out Mark Warren sitting doing Ewan McGregor's lines, because it's them getting set up to do like all the this, you know, the special t testing the special effects shots basically for Jar Jar. So it's guy sitting, not even Ahmed Best, it's some other guy sitting with like a Jar Jar thing on his head, and they're all doing the lines, but it's completely different actors. And then it's Mark Warren as Obi-Wan. So you'd think like they would give him, you know, a bit part in episode one somewhere. I was like, no, it's not even in any official credits. It's just like, if you know him, you're just there going, that's Bligh from Band of Brothers. He's in Doctor Who all the time. Like, it's that guy. And he's just like, yeah, it's just, you know, it was a gig, I guess, that I came in, got early access to, you know, episode one, because I got to see the script way before anyone else. But like, it's like, did they give me a shot to be Obi-Wan? No, they give it to Ewan McGregor instead. But I just thought that was just so crazy, that it was just like rewatching the show and then scrolling through Instagram, just saw this footage of him. And I was like, "That's what the hell? That's that guy. Is this a well-known thing?" He's like, "No, it's not on any official credits anywhere, but it's definitely him doing it." So, I thought I'd bring that up to be like, "Hey, did you talk about that at the time? Like,
No, that's the first
was it
time.
the
First time
thing?"
someone has brought that up.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy that now, obviously, tragically, Bly is no longer with us in the show at this point, but I'm happy to be able to like, you know, contribute that final bit of knowledge. But I don't know if Mark Warren has that as a kind of real thing about like, I was in Star Wars, you know. Yeah, but like, you never saw me. But like, they couldn't have made that movie without me. I was integral to that movie being made.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. Also, in IMDb, it doesn't even mention in the trivia or biography or something like that, about the fact that
No,
he was a stand-in.
that's crazy. It's Yeah, I think it'd be prime IMDb trivia stuff, but I was shocked to see it's not there. But if you just Google it, it will pop up like, yep, that's what
So
he did.
you should add it. You should add it to IMDb.
Yeah. And again, though, the thing with Star Wars, any Star Wars, like Band of Brothers, if you live in, you know, the UK or the UK adjacent, the amount of stuff like episode one to me is like, oh, there's Brona Gallagher as just like an X-wing pilot and stuff. You know, it's always the random English bit part actors, English, Irish, Welsh bit part actors that are like thrown into a Hollywood thing that you're just like, oh, hey, it's like, I don't know if people know this, but that was the boyfriend from Early Doors and stuff. So, and yeah, too, particularly because I'm living in Liverpool currently, and Stephen Graham is like a citywide hero here. Like, people love Stephen Graham. So again, it's ecstatic to see like, oh, there's Stephen Graham. It's just randomly popped into a scene out of nowhere doing his Al Capone accent, you know. But
What's really interesting is if so you're right, if you do a quick Google search, so it says Mark Warren was involved in Star Wars Episode One, though not in an on-screen acting role. He served as a stand-in and helped produce digital storyboards for Ian McGregor during pre-production in April
yeah.
1997. So that's even 2 years
It's
before
like
the movie came
two
out.
full years before the thing comes out. Yeah, that's people keep track of that. Like, obviously, you know, Star Wars meant it being a thing, but like, people, I got a thing popping up the other day that was like, you know, from one of the Star Wars pages, and was like, "Happy birthday to Sally Hawkins," from episode one. And I was like, Sally Hawkins is in episode one. And they're like, yeah, she's in a crowd. And they showed you the picture. It was like literally just a crowd from a mile away and an arrow pointing down and going like, that lady there is Sally Hawkins. I was like, man, you people keep track of this stuff like this. That's nuts that anyone would be like, who is it? Is Sally Hawkins telling people like, you should know I was in Star Wars as well, by the way. Like, who would have thought to go and look for her in a crowd? Who was combing through the crowd footage that much to be like, oh, there she is, you know?
Well, it goes back to the Ben Affleck comment, where Ben Affleck and Matt Damon were extras in Field of Dreams. You know, when they're in when they're in the baseball when they're in Fenway, okay? And apparently years later, when Ben Affleck was in when he played Jack Ryan in, I think it was Without Remorse, I think that's the name of it. So he met the director, Phil Alden Robinson, who was the same director for Field of Dreams, and says, "Hey, it's great working with you again." And the director looks at him, "What the hell are you talking about?" He says, "Yeah, I was an extra on Field of Dreams."
Oh,
So.
it's always appreciated. I think my biggest one was in doing research for Batman and Robin, watching one of the old Adam West episodes with Mr.
Okay.
Freeze. I think it's the auto premature
Yes.
Mr. Freeze. And at one point, people are walking out of a skating rink, and one of the people is just Terry Garr. She doesn't have any lines, but you're just like, that's Terry Garr, and she just walks on past. And then looking into it, it's just like, yeah, it wasn't in her IMDb until like really recently. But it's like, yeah, uncredited. It must have been literally just before she did like that Star Trek episode.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, it's so crazy to just be like, oh, there's like with a completely wordless like throwaway part. There is, you know, future American darling, Terry Garr, like on the cusp of being like a huge deal and stuff. But
Now, if you look, if you do look on IMDb for Sally Hawkins, it's listed there. She's uncredited as a villager in The Phantom Menace. So.
I think she like after all the
And it was her
Oscar
very
stuff
first.
and
It
like
was her
all.
very first credit.
I guess maybe that's why you would point it out because you're like, you know, if someone comes and asks you like, you know, Oscar nominated, you know, indie darling Sally Hawkins, how did you get your start? You might be like, well, my first role was in Star Wars. You should know. Like it makes you sound like a big deal. It's like, ooh, were you like one of Padme's maidens or something? Like, nah, it's just it's just literally standing in the
I was just a
crowd.
villager, just watching everything going on. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's right.
This is like I thought I would have assumed all those people were CGIs. It was like, yeah, well, they were all CGI. It was just me standing on a green screen, and then they just added like 500 people standing around
Exactly.
me. But,
Nice way to do that. All right. So, thank you for your history of Band of Brothers and a little bit of trivia.
I forgot that was what we were talking about there. But yes, that's my history of
There.
with Band of Brothers.
Okay, so episode 117 begins with the Men of Easy continuing through the woods, and ends with Winters and Nixon not knowing what they need to do. So we left things yesterday with the men getting an order to start walking through the woods, trying to figure out just make sure everything's secure around this little town that they've sort of commandeered. So, we have the men walking through, and we can see, people that we're familiar with. We see Precanti, we see O'Keefe, we see Bull, we see Popeye, Luz is here also, and they're all looking around trying to figure out what's going on. And they have a great shot of O'Keefe where they give us a 360. Like the camera goes around him, and it's great. Just trying to.
Yeah, it's a really, really snazzy little move too. Where like every time it's kind of like, whoa, wait, like you know, watch this clip a bunch of times, and every time I was really taken by like, holy moly, that's a really impressive shot.
And then they hear something, and they stop. And what's great is that we see the reactions of each of them are very different. Like Bull is looking around trying to figure out. It seems as if they hear something, and then O'Keefe basically says, "It sure is quiet."
As of speaking of O'Keefe though, and people who like got a you know went on to bigger and better things, the whole rewatch, every time O'Keefe popped up, I was like, oh, it's the guy who plays Draven in Rogue One and Andor. It's that guy. It's like, oh, that's where, like, that's kind of appropriate that he would like be a young actor in Band of Brothers, and then he'd go on to be in like basically fighting the space Nazis, you know, in Rogue One. And then I discovered like this morning, like, no, that's not him. It's a completely different actor. But the whole time I was just like, yeah, that's totally the guy who plays Draven. Yeah, like it just looks exactly like him. But no, the guy who plays O'Keefe is like nowhere near as distinguished as the guy as Draven. So that was kind of like the flip of what we were just talking about, like mistaking a guy, a main character for Band of Brothers, to be like, oh, he went on to have a great and burgeoning career. Oh, no, he didn't. Not that he doesn't work, that he didn't work, but like he wasn't getting no Star Wars.
No.
You know, he wasn't
No.
not even a crowd shot next to Sally Hawkins,
Oh,
man.
well, yeah, you can't always get a crowd shot. Yeah.
You need to have like the screen presence of a Sally Hawkins in order to pull off a role like
That's
that.
true. And then Perconte goes, "He's right, fellas." And then one of them they keep listening for something. And what's great about this whole scene is that we don't even know if they hear anything or if the thing that bothers them is the fact that they don't hear anything. But they're all very concerned about something. We even get Bull chomping on his cigar a little bit, and then the guys start cocking their guns. And now, I mean, anyone who has been in these type of situations, as a soldier, this is not the point where you're going to be cocking your gun. You're going to have your gun cocked well before this, assuming that you want to make sure that everything is clear. You're not going to wait until you hear nothing. That's a movie slash TV show trope, where you do that.
That's like the ratchet up the tension of just
Exactly.
like things are too quiet.
Exactly.
Oh, now things are in motion. Yeah, I was wondering though, with is there any notes on Bull's cigar? Because obviously these guys are after like surviving on rations, and I was like, is this like does he just have like an endless supply of cigars because he's constantly chomping
Maybe it's the
on
same
them,
cigar.
or is it?
Maybe it's a maybe
It's
it's a
like it's
plastic,
literally yeah, it's a rationed
maybe it's a
cigar. Yeah.
plastic cigar, because it's not as if it's not lit.
Yeah, but it was like the real life Bull been like, oh no, that was a chomping cigar. That wasn't like I never smoked that. It was only there to make me look cool and to have constantly at the side of my mouth.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think even play when they're playing baseball at the end, it's like, is he still puffing on that goddamn
That's right.
cigar?
Very true.
I know there was a guy around my hometown, Joe the Dumper, he was called, because he drove a dump truck, and like, survived well into his 80s. But that was the thing they always said, that he never like mentally. I might have talked about this during Saving Private Ryan, actually. Like he never mentally recovered from like rationing during the
I
war.
actually don't remember you telling me that
So,
story, so it's possible that we didn't talk about
yeah.
that.
But people, yeah, would say, like, when you come around to like, it was a kind of like a freelance, I say a dump truck, not like a big lorry. Like he just had this little digger kind of thing that people would put their trash in, and so it was kind of like a freelance dump truck guy, Joe the Dumper, and he, people would always say like, yeah, when you'd invite him in for a cup of tea, he would only ever take warm water with a little tiny drop of milk in it, because that was just like that's what you had to have over in my hometown during the war, because everything was getting rationed off and stuff. And so he never got out of that mentality. Like he was always just like, yep, that's what I drink. And they're just like, we have tea bags now, man. You can have tea or coffee. He's like, no. All you'd ever survive on was like, the boiled water with a little tiny a drip of milk in there. So yeah, I'm not surprised that Bull at the end, he's just like, I can't part with the cigar. Like this, like I'm like it's the same one. I've had it for 5 years now, but like it lives in the side. Like I don't know how it's maintained its structural integrity after all this time, but somehow I've been chewing on the same cigar for the entire duration of my time in Easy Company.
That's right. And again, he would have had to bring whatever he has to carry whatever he wants. So, to carry to spend some of the weight, carrying and space to carry so many cigars is pretty interesting too.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But yeah, so the thing is though that the eerie quiet though, it's kind of like, it's good. It's a good build up to what they're gonna, eventually find. But there is always that thing of like, some places do just have like an aura. You go into like a haunted house or something. It just has a kind of like something feels off in here. There's always just a vibe. I kind of took that to be like the bit like it's so quiet, but there's also this like there's something. It feels like something's wrong with this area because something is heinously wrong.
Right.
Yeah. So I kind of got the vibe that they were picking up on the vibe of like there's something not right in
That's
these
right.
woods, you know.
If this was a horror series, this is where the monster would attack. When these guys are
Yeah,
least
yeah.
suspecting this type of thing. And then they give us another great shot with the six of them, standing at the edge of the woods, just staring. And
Yeah.
I mean, I do love the way that they do this, that they don't let us in on the secret at this point.
I look at even during my rewatch, like I was like, what has he found? Like you really were like, what is this gonna be? And then when you see what it is, it's like, oh okay. And then now I get why they're building that up so
Right,
much.
but again, when you're watching this the first time, you don't necessarily know what's going to happen here. And then the
Yeah.
shot cuts away, and we see Percante just running, and you're like, okay, what the hell did he? What did they just see? And the first thought you could possibly think of is, okay, is he the only one who just arrived? Like what happened to everybody else? Where are they?
Yeah.
Why is he running, so fast? And he's also carrying his helmet. He's not even. He's just doing whatever he can. He runs into town and he starts seeing a whole bunch of the guys and he asks the first guy he comes to, he goes, "You seen Foley?" "No." And then he goes to another group of guys and goes, "Hey guys, any you see any of the officers?" And then someone goes, "No, speak to Popeye." And then he runs over to Popeye. "Hey Popeye, see any officers? Nixon, Foley?" And Popeye goes, "Oh, Spears is searching them buildings right down the street. What's the matter?" And Percanti just, doesn't even stop to catch his breath. And he goes, "More, more. Have you, no." Then he moves up to Alton Moore, and he goes, "More, more. Have you seen any of the officers?" And he goes, "Yeah, Major Winters is right in there." And he points to one of the buildings. And then Moore says to him, "Are you all right, Frank?" And at this point, Percanti does meet up with Winters. And what's great is that we see that Percanti is on the edge of, I guess, his sanity even at this point. And everyone else is nice and calm, because they don't understand the urgency of what Percanti needs here. And
Yeah,
then,
yeah. I was thinking like the of all the things in Band of Brothers that I couldn't do, like that I couldn't physically pull off at any. I don't think at any point in my life, Percante running all the way back into town with all his gear on, just full tilt. Like he's not slow. We don't know how. Does it ever say like how far out of town this is? Because like you get a vibe he's running for like a long time. Like it's not like it's just down the road. It's like no, he's had to like
Well, no,
boot all the way
it can't be
in
that
big heavy
far
boots.
because of what I'll be talking about with my next guest later this week and the beginning of next week. But yeah, you're right. It's not that far, but it's also not that close.
Particularly too if you're like in combat boots and like a hauling a machine
That's
gun
right.
and stuff on the top of it.
Correct. And then he catches up.
But yeah, I was just like, oh man, I could not do that. I was getting tired just looking at him.
Okay, makes sense. And then he catches up to Winters and he goes, "Major Winters, sir, we found something. We were out on patrol and we came across this." And he goes, and like he came across this, and he doesn't even know how to explain it. And Winters goes, "What, Frank? What is it?" He says, I don't know, sir. I don't know." And it's again, it's great that he's able to get Winters to believe him and come right with him. And I love how you can see Webster in the background just like walking around. I mean, that's one of the things that the great things about this entire series is they had all the actors here for the entire shoot, and even when the actors weren't the central pieces of that particular part or anything like that, they were still there in the background. So here you have Ian Bailey, who part eight was all was focusing on him, and now we're in part nine, but you just see him wandering around in the background, which is great, because nowadays they wouldn't do that, because they wouldn't pay people to just stick around on the one hand, and on the other hand, people wouldn't necessarily want to be there for 10 months to do all the shooting.
Yeah, particularly if you're one of the actors who doesn't get like an episode, like you're just one of the kind of like lower tier members of Easy Company, where it's like, yeah, you might get a line every once in a while, but you're not like the focus of anything. But yeah, it's kind of like the opposite of that's a good, can't believe I'm bringing up Cheers twice in in this
You
episode, but
can.
like but in ep episodes of Cheers, well, they'll have like extras will talk as if they're like, Norm, one of Norm's best friends, as if they've known him for years. And it's like, you've never seen that actor before. That's just some guy they got the day to be like, hey, Norm, tell us more about like what, just like last week. And you're just like, oh yeah, they have to give this impression that this is a bar full of people who all know each other, when it's only really like four or five characters who know each other consistently, and the rest of them are all just random extras who they never get in consistently. Whereas, this is like, yeah, Easy Company, it's just like you just know to look at them from a glance that that is Easy Company, because it's all the same people, even at the lower tiers and stuff. They've actually maintained, they've made it feel like it's a lived-in thing, rather than just like, yeah, we just got some other asshole to play a random soldier in the background. Which is why, you so consistently get random sightings of Michael Fassbender, where you're like, oh, there he is again. There's like a
That's
drive-by
right. You
Fassbender
just have to
going
look
here,
for
but.
Sally Hawkins in the background somewhere. Yeah. She's probably there somewhere in a crowd shot as a villager.
Sally Hawkins coming over to Norm and Cheers, been like, hey Norm, remember my last birthday? Remember when you got me that present? It's like, yes, we are clearly friends for a long period of time, random actors I've just met.
And at this point, we get a shot of Winters in a Jeep with Nixon, Spears, and Frank. At least Frank didn't need to run back this time, and Frank gets a shotgun seat. That's pretty good too. They don't put him in the back. It's a you stick from the back.
It's also just so happy to see some getting some Ron Livingston representation there as well. This is the like, of all the people, again, like so many actors, people say they just don't age, and it's like that man has not ever looked any different. Like he is literally consistently the same haircut, the same vibe, the same stubble all the time. It's like that is the eternal Ron
Hey, if
Livingston
it
over
works,
there.
why not, right?
Yeah.
And then Perconti points to he points to the side and says to Winters, "Major, sir." And again, we see them just looking, giving us, as before, just the look on the soldiers' faces, and not letting us know for another few seconds what it is that they're watching. And then we see like a guard tower and the fence. We see something across on the other side of the fence also, and they're all just looking, trying to figure out what it is. And the camera work is great, that it's very shaky here, so that you still can't really tell what's going on there. In order to I guess hide the surprise a little bit. Now, what I find really amazing is not only does Winters come, but they have, at least two trucks behind them of men that Frank apparently found a way to convince them to bring everyone. It's like. Who are you gonna bring? Just bring
I guess
everybody.
too, like if you know people over like as many years as they've been there together, you would be like, yeah, he's not gonna tell me to bring everybody if he doesn't mean it,
That's right. And
Then when Winter's getting out there, been like, looking for something really devastating, and he's just like, what? Is it something behind the concentration camp? Like, what am I looking for here? It's like, no, man, it is the concentration.
exactly. And we see Bull on the ground. It looks like he's well, he no longer has his cigar in his mouth, but it looks like maybe he threw up or something like that, because he's like dabbing his mouth with some sort of handkerchief. And we just see a whole bunch of prisoners that, since most of us have seen enough movies over the years, you can tell that this is some sort of concentration camp, by the striped pajamas and the emasculated, emasculated, the, I don't remember,
and being
Emaciated.
emaciated,
There you go. That's
you know what I
the
mean?
word. Emasculated is
Yes.
something else. The emaciated, figures of all of these men. And, Winters is in complete shock as to what they're seeing here. Rightfully so, but it's also amazing that by April 1945, they still didn't know that this stuff was going on. Or it wasn't information
I
that was
think that
passed
was
on.
well. Yeah, that was kind of one of the big revelations of those to me. It's just like, oh, they weren't expecting it.
No, not at
Like,
all.
this was news to them. It was like, oh, this stuff is happening. And they're just like, oh, had no idea it was like this type of
Well,
event was
maybe it
occurring.
has to do with the fact that because they came from the Western Front, like it's possible that on the Eastern Front, the Russians were aware of these things because they came across it, beforehand. Emaciated, that's the word.
Well, that
Is that what we said before? Emaciated? There you go.
Emaciated, But like, so what? Well, that's the thing, though. Historically, was this a thing? Like, was there news going back to the U.S. that maybe they weren't getting that? Like, oh yeah, we believe that people have been held in these camps, or was it more like when the soldiers were coming along and finding them, then they're reporting back like we found all this stuff that like, there wasn't like people had a heads up ahead of the time. They're just like, yeah, we've come and we've claimed Germany. By the way, you should see some of the stuff we're finding in here. This is crazy. Or like, were they informed well ahead of time? Like, well, we think that these things are going to be in there, but like, from reports, or was it like a was it like with Winters here, like a complete surprise of like, Jesus Christ, what is this
Yeah,
thing?
they have no idea what's going on here. And then Winter starts. We see, even one of the prisoners is holding on to the barbed wire fence, and you can see that he has a tattoo on his chest also, which is very strange, because that's not something I'd ever heard of before. Usually the tattoos are just on the arm, which again we will talk about when we get to that. But they're all looking around trying to figure out what to do. And they brought a whole bunch of medics also with them. At least, again, they knew to bring the medics. And the smell apparently is horrendous because these guys are all, covering their mouths and stuff like that. And Winters is even putting his hand on his nose. And he says to one of the guys, he says, "Open it up." And he goes, "Yes, sir." And he goes, "Stand back. Give us some room. Stand back. Back, back." And they start moving into the camp itself to see what they can do, how they can help, and things like that. And it's just really amazing the way that they show this to us. The way this isn't 100% accurate as to what really happened with Easy. We'll get to that, but it's still very poignant the way that they show it here.
I think it also too, it is tense as well, like them trying to open the gate and going in, because you're not too sure again if there's still going to be guards in there, or like what you're kind of got a thing of like, well, they open that gate, you're kind of taking a breath to be like, okay, what are we going to get into when we get inside here as well. And they kind of do a good job of building that up.
And as they're walking through, a couple of the prisoners latch on to them, grabbing their arms and things like that. Which, if this was a zombie movie, things would be very different. And they don't know how to react even. Winters takes off his helmet, I guess maybe to show his humanity that he's not just like a soldier who's here. And then he calls over to Christensen. He goes, "Christensen, any of your men speak German?" He goes, "No, sir." And he goes, "I need Liebgott. Liebgott." And then he turns to Lipton and goes, "Lipton, find me Liebgott." He goes, "Yes, sir. Liebgott." And he starts moving, looking around for him and screaming out, "Liebgott, Liebgott." And he ends up finding Liebgott. Now the irony here is that we see when he's looking for Liebgott, he sees Webster. Now we know Webster also speaks German, but they still wanted Liebgott. And Liebgott's basically standing guard all the way in the back, and they come up to him, and he goes, "Major needs you up front right now." And he goes, "Sure." And then Lipton looks around to everybody and says, "All right, boys, these people need care. Give them water and any spare rations you might have." And then he turns to one of the guys and goes, "Grab me some ration. Grab me some blankets. Grab me some blankets, quick." So again, Lipton is taking control right away, like expected with this type of thing.
I was more surprised though than that, like, because they get in and just saying people are coming over and clasping them and stuff like that, and there's a real thing of like they've got this sort of vibe of like, oh, thankfully someone's come for us. I think even having gone through everything you've gone through in there, would you even register just seeing more people come in uniforms with guns? Would you not just think it's more, it's someone potentially even worse coming in? Or like, would you clock that, like, oh, this is like the resistance, or this is the Americans or whatever arriving to finally liberate the camp? Or would you be in terror of like, is there someone else coming in to take over? Like, it's it just kind of struck me as like the fact that the people in there seem to know that they're being fred
Right.
finally. Which I don't think that I would
They're
have
not going to
clocked
be looking
that.
forward to the Americans coming to liberate them. You know, that type of thing. They don't know about that. You know.
I guess maybe you might say like, oh, they might see like the medics' helmets with like, the cross and stuff, and you go like, oh yeah, like that would internationally translate as, medicine. But like, I don't know if, again, that you wouldn't just be like, kind of backing off in fear of these guys because they're just like more
Right.
assholes coming in with helmets and guns and
Yeah,
stuff.
it's a good question. My assumption is that there probably was shock on both sides here. And maybe they were saying to themselves, okay, the uniforms are different. These aren't the Germans, so let's hope that, that it's someone who has come to try and help us. That would be my guess
But
from that. So that's how this 5-minute segment ends. Is there anything else you wanted to add about it now?
no, nothing. Because we're here for a
Yes.
while now
Yes.
in the camp. So like anything I could bring up now could be brought up. Will be as relevant, in the next
Right.
episode.
Okay.
So.
Excellent. So today's segment is called Band Brand, where my guests will give their top five fictional movie bands. So, Niall, why don't you start with your number one and work your way up? Sorry,
Yeah,
start with
I
your
know
number five.
you've always
I
got.
didn't mean number one. Start with your number five, not number one.
Know you, Rob. You've always given out about me ever trying to do any honorable mentions and stuff in the background. Like, you don't get honorable mentions. You have to. It
No,
has to be the
you can add
five.
an
But
honorable
like,
mention. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, they don't.
that's not what you said
No,
the last time, man. Like, you're always like,
We
oh.
could go back and roll the tape and find out, but I don't mind if you mention them, but
Oh, but no, my honorable mention was because it's not movies, it's TV, but it would've been Mystic Spiral from Daria, was one of my top TV band. But no, I think I'll start off with I'll go with I was just trying to think of like bands that have like genuine bangers that like I would listen to outside of the movie. And one of them, I was torn between in Scott Pilgrim versus the World, because you obviously have Sex Bomb. But then I think you only get to see one, the Clash of Demon Head song, obviously performed by in the film by Brie Larson. But that is the song I would listen to, like the song Black Sheep. I would listen to that outside in the real world more than any Sex Bomb songs. So I think by that. And I just love their aesthetic, the whole thing. I'm assuming you've seen Scott
Yes.
Pilgrim versus the World. But like, just I love the outfit they put Brie Larson in. I just love their whole aesthetic of the band, with like the drummer with like the long black hair and the perfectly round glasses that kind of like reflect, off them rather than seeing her eyes and stuff like that. And the song, yeah, it's an absolute banger. So they're my number five. And then in the place in number four, I can't remember their exact name, but I know, because I think they actually play several different bands, but it's the same performers each time, is in Phantom of the Paradise. Have you seen Phantom of the Paradise,
I
Rob? Is
don't
that
think
one
so.
that you're...
Doesn't sound.
Oh, Phantom. It's fantastic. Like, it's a weird movie, but it's great. It's one of those ones that seems to simultaneously get cited as being like one of the worst films
Yeah, but
ever.
you like her.
And also one of the best, but it's also cited as like one of the best films ever. Like when people, like, some people absolutely love it, but like, yeah, Phantom of the Paradise. It's basically Brian De Palma's version of Phantom of the Opera, but it's set in like the future, but it's the future that's very much the 70s. And it's all about like the evils of the record industry. And you know, guy gets nearly murdered and like comes back as this kind of twisted,
You know
you
what?
know,
I
weird
actually have seen it
phantom.
and I hated it. It was terrible. Yeah,
Really?
hated
Oh, like I love Phantom of the Paradise. But throughout that, there's various different musical interludes by like various different, you know, performers. But there's like a band that shows up as different bands consistently throughout. And all their songs are really great. So whatever those performers are throughout Phantom of the Paradise, their various iterations, it's a soundtrack I have on constantly on loop. So, despite the fact that apparently it gets very mixed reactions from people, I'll go with I'm gonna go with the Phantom of the
Okay.
Paradise. And then I'm gonna throw a little curveball because in my heart of hearts. Like I should put Spinal Tap in here because they are amazing and they do genuinely have great songs, but I'm gonna do a little throw out instead to the Folksmen from A Mighty Wind, mostly because I just love the fact that like people might have brought this up before, but obviously Spinal Tap, the band, like the fictional band, were toured as a real band, so you could go to see Spinal Tap like over the years. And what they used to do way before Mighty Wind came out was that they would have like, oh, Spinal Tap, you know, featuring the Folksmen, and the opening act, because you're gonna know all Spinal Tap fans are all gonna be like metalheads, and then okay, like then they would bring out at the, as their opener these twee little like acoustic folk people called the Folksmen to come out, and the crowd would boo them because they're like, this isn't the music they're here for, but the joke was. Those guys, the Folksmen, are the same actors from the guys in Spinal Tap. So, like, it is the Spinal Tap guys, just in different outfits, coming out to perform. So I just loved that as a thing that they did. But also watching Mighty Wind, all the songs in that are great. But like the Folksmen stuff, like Eat a Joe's, Eat at O's, great, great song. So I'm throwing it out to them because I know Spinal Tap will have got their due. Through people throughout the season as they should because they are an amazing fictional band, but you know I'm gonna shed a little more light the Folksmen's way because I
Okay.
think they and the Mighty Wind are really great and underrated, and then my second one is going to be again from and I know it's a contentious film, but I think it's getting more and more love as the days go by. Is Josie and the Pussycats from the 2001 film Josie and the Pussycats? Also, like I think all the songs were written by the Fountains of Wayne guy, who like I remember he passed during COVID and stuff. He was one of the first big COVID celebrity deaths. And it was also coming out, but like, well, not only was he in Fountains of Wayne, he was also like, he wrote That Thing You Do and all the music for Josie and the Pussycats. And then like, all the songs are obviously before, they're not performed by Rachel Lee Cook, but like, you know, there's the lady from Letters to Cleo. But they're all bangers, and I just love that film so much. Like, you could hear me talking for an entire episode about how much I love Josie and the Pussycats over in, Travis Bowe's Real Comics Heroes, like we were just there for like 2 hours of me going like I just love absolutely every element of this film, and yeah, this is the fact that the song like the film itself is really fun, but it also has a soundtrack to, you know, to back it up. So and they just have a great aesthetic and a great sound, and it's just like a really fun time. So wholeheartedly recommend Josie and the Pussycats is my number two. And then my number one is going to be, well, I'm sure probably will have been cited by other people, but from like one of my all-time favorite films, I'm going with Stillwater from Almost
Why does that not
Famous.
surprise me? I knew that was coming. I knew it was, and great
Yeah,
choice.
that was one of the ones again. One I was really chomping at the bit. I felt like because I know someone was doing, like Eric was doing Almost Famous Minute. I don't think he completed it. I think it was kind of like it's. It sat as an incomplete project, but I love Almost Famous so much. I was chomping at the bit for someone to do it to completion, and I was so happy I got to go on to guest for a few episodes. But yeah, I think I felt like at times I was like, should I do Almost Famous Minutes? But also, I feel like you need someone who knows like an encyclopedic knowledge of like the
Right.
70s rock
Sure.
scene. So There was people I had in mind where I was trying to like I was going to them going like, Heidi, you know a lot about music. Wouldn't you want to do Almost Famous Minutes? And she's like, no. But like I'm still waiting for someone to come in and do a full show of it. Because it's a film I love so much. But also, like, not only is it a great film, but the soundtrack, again, fantastic, including all the stuff that they wrote for Stillwater. And of course the whole film is about well, it's because it's more about the kid rather than the band, but it's ostensibly about the kid hanging out with the band. So it's a fictional band that takes up the entire narrative of the film and stuff. Yeah, just like we'll always take time out to shout out Almost Famous. So and Stillwater. So
Very cool. And now we will play the daily game of name that World War II movie. So I'm going to randomly give you a synopsis of a World War II movie, and you have to try and tell me what movie it is. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get. Round and round and round the wheel goes. This is a movie from 1976, and I will give you a little bit of a hint by telling you that it was remade in 2019, and it's all about a battle that happened in the Pacific Theater during World War II that basically changed the tide of the war. The 1976 movie stars Charlton Heston, Henry Fonda, James Coburn, Glenn Ford, Hal Holbrook, Robert Mitchum, Cliff Robertson, Robert Wagner, Robert Weber, James Shigeta. You know who that is. He's Takagi from Die Hard. Any other names? Pat Morita was in it. Dabney Coleman, Eric Estrada. Oh my God. Tom Selleck.
You're talking yourself now into like, oh, I think this might be the next season of Movie
No, no,
Rob.
no, it won't be. Do you have any
Yeah.
idea?
My impulse was to say, Tora, 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 but I know it's not. It's one that's just like it's. I think it's close in time, but it's Midway. I know that. I've actually not seen Midway, but I just
Is
know
correct.
of it
You are
as
right.
a
The
as
answer
a.
is Midway. Nicely done.
Yeah,
A
yeah,
good process of
yeah.
elimination to try and get you there.
That was like I'm actually reading a book at the minute, and it had one of the jokes that opened the chapter was. What was the war cry of the kamikaze rabbis? Torah, Torah, Torah.
Ah,
I
very good.
was like,
That's a good joke.
okay. I was like, I thought that
Yeah,
was
I like
pretty
it.
good. It works much better written down because you can see the H at the end,
Right.
obviously.
Well, there is no H in the original one, but that's fine. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Very cool. All right. So, Niall, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Niall McGowan?
Yes, if you want to hear more from me, you can hear me. The main show is Bat Minute, where we talk about the Batman films 1 minute at a time. I think I've been on a record number of seasons of Movie Rob Minute, where I keep saying our next season is the 66th season of covering the Adam West movie. But I swear to God, it's like by the time this is airing, that season will be also airing. Like it will be. It's probably we're on the home straight now. It's basically just getting the episodes edited to go out. We're just like, we're at that point now of like, yeah, we've got enough time now to actually start airing this
I have
consistently.
faith in you and John that you're going to get it out.
Yeah. There's like I feel like I've been saying it for ages, and then I look back and going like, whoa, we started recording that, and like it's it'll be June now when this airs. We started recording that last September. I was like, Jesus Christ. Like usually we turn these things around pretty quick, but that one's I think it's because just basically me and John are both like, I've started a new job, John's started a new job. He's out doing gigs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then it's just like, oh yeah, so we just had a little less time than usual to get it on a consistent schedule. But now it's all ready to go. So yep, we'll be talking about each minute of the 1966 Batman film. Yeah, like that's the current big job that's should be airing
All right,
presently. So.
excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow, Kareem!